Hi, is this Penelope?
Yes, it is.
Hi, this is Ross Robertson from Wood of Enlightenment.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Well, first, I thought it'd be fun just to start off with if you had a favorite story of speaking. I mean, I basically was interested just in basically interspecies communication with, you know, using telepathy, which is kind of, would that be the largest kind of box to draw around what it is?
Yeah,
that you
I
do?
Call it interspecies telepathic communication.
Right.
I've kind of coined that term. And,
uh-huh.
and, because otherwise people confuse it with training animals or something.
Uh-huh.
When they say interspecies communication, people sometimes think of, you know, training dolphins to do things or whatever.
Or so, teaching sign language to a great ape or something,
yeah,
like that. Yeah,
and that's not what this is about. Although
right.
all those forms of communication are valid, it's just that this is the behind every form of communication. It's sort of the universal language that underlies all our communications, including human communication. Because if we don't understand what we're feeling, and telepathy means feeling across the distance,
okay.
tele is the distance, and pathy is feeling.
Uh-huh.
So it means being able to feel another across the distance. So if you can't feel what another person is really communicating when they're saying something, I mean, you can't just look up all the words in the dictionary.
Right. It's not going to be
the same. You know, I mean, you will get a very stilted and not necessarily what they're really communicating.
Right.
If you really don't listen and get their feeling, whether your eyes are open, whether your eyes are closed, whether you're looking at their body language or not,
yeah.
whether we're on the phone, whether we're at a distance, telepathy is involved if you're actually really understanding another person.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be able to get their feelings. And with the animals, obviously you can spend time learning all their languages, and they have vast and complex languages, and, you know, that will take you a long time, just like it does to learn human languages. But if you tune in telepathically, then it bypasses all the languages, and in fact you can learn the other languages more easily than, I mean, as far as the animal signs and their behaviors and all their dances and different languages.
Postures and signals and
yeah,
kind of social
yeah, which
rituals
are all parts
kind
of their languages and their songs and their calls. And,
right.
But it doesn't matter, because if you can communicate telepathically, then you've got everybody. It goes across species to everybody. And you know, because once you can get their feelings, their images, their all their senses, you know,
uh-huh.
you can get what they hear, you can get what they feel, you get what they think, then you can, you know, obviously for human communication, we then translate it into words as best we can that approximate what it is our understanding.
I was just thinking in terms of, like, completely agree with you and what you're saying about human communication, in the sense that if you were to kind of cut off your all kind of empathic sense, you get a very limited transmission from just
yeah.
words alone.
Yeah.
But if I imagine, you know, if I were to take all the words out, I could certainly, you know, there's certain things I could see would be easily communicated, like emotion and
yeah.
and kind of, you know, valence kind of feelings. But I wonder if, you know, the other things that might be hard to communicate, ideas.
Well, you'd have to be very advanced telepathically to get all the formulas of scientific formulas or, you know,
right.
details like that. And I would say we're not at that place yet. You know, I mean, even
more
advanced people like myself, I would get some of that, and I would get some senses of that, or I might get pictures of your computer, or I might even get a picture of a formula, you know,
mm-hmm.
similar to how people do in dreams or inspirations.
Right.
I might get pictures from you like that. But our language was developed to transmit, you know, more complex thoughts, and not necessarily even feeling. Although, you know, the feeling can be transmitted by language, but you still have to get the feeling. You
right,
can't
right,
get
right.
it from the words. And but the thinking and the details, particularly when you start talking about analytical things,
right.
then the language is a lot easier.
So how does that translate to speaking or to communicating with animals in terms of, do you get
but,
more
But it doesn't
kind of underlying...
seem to be any barrier with animals.
Huh.
I mean, you can
like
get
you
their
can get...
complex thinking. You know, again, animals don't have the socialization that we have. They don't have the barriers. So actually, with animals, you know, you could do it with particular people and practice with them so
uh-huh.
that they could transmit. So they would learn to transmit and be open to sending their thoughts, their more complex thoughts. But we don't do that because we rely on language. I mean,
right.
I wouldn't do it
yeah.
because it's easier for me to do it with language.
Right.
But with the animals, since we don't have that opportunity, I can get all kinds of things. I can get detailed things about their how they feel in their bodies, where they've been, complex behavior patterns. They can tell me about those. They can transmit them to me, and I can attempt to translate them into words. Very, very complex things.
Wow.
About their dances, what they mean, uh-huh. You know, all that kind of stuff. So there isn't that much barrier, because one of the things is I'm very practiced at it.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that there's really no other way with animals. Whereas with humans, we start right away learning the language, so that becomes the easiest way. If we were mute, then you would have to start to get all those things telepathically. And I feel we're moving that way. We're moving to a place of getting more and more telepathic transmissions. But, you know, when you look at it, where did Einstein get his theories? I mean, he will admit he got them in dreams.
Right.
He got them in from his naps. You know,
right.
All the greatest inventors will tell you they woke up from a nap and they wrote out this, you know, how to create this machine or this great formula or whatever.
Right.
You know, so that's telepathy, really. You know, I mean, that's how it comes across. But we'd have to be a lot more practiced at it to get more complex things.
Yeah, right. I'm interested to hear how you first discovered this capacity in yourself. You know, because I read that you discovered it at an early age. Is that
right? Always. I mean, frankly, we're born telepathic. I never let it go. I actually had an urgency to stay telepathic because I was in an abusive household, and I really didn't have good human contacts. And so the telepathy actually was the survival mechanism for me. And plus, my only friends were really animals. I mean, even my brothers and sisters. I mean, we were all trying to survive. And so there was, you know, even tremendous tension between us. So I really honed it from a very young age. I didn't let it go. I didn't care what people said, that it was my imagination or that the animals were stupid or that this was impossible. Believe me, I never let it go. I mean, because I was pretty alone, even though, you know, I was in a big family. There was so much stress there. And I was a very spiritual person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I went to Mass every day. I prayed all the time. I talked to saints and angels and the animals and everybody. And so it was sort of, I never let it die. Whereas most people in the culture, as soon as they're told that, because humans are very social and they believe what their, you know, elders tell them.
Right.
Generally, and they want to be accepted by their peers, they generally go under the pressure that whatever people say doesn't exist.
But you think partly for you it was just because out of the need because of.
I would say that even if I had chosen a really nice family that loved me and all that, I don't think I'd ever have lost the telepathic connection, because that's part of what I'm here for,
mm-hmm.
and that's part of my function in this world is to move that forward for all of humanity. I mean, the animals, they don't have any problem with it, so you know.
Yeah, right.
With humans is to forge that telepathic connection so we really understand each other better. We really get each other rather than, you know, looking at words and fighting with concepts.
Mm.
You know, because it really, the only things that cause us to fight each other, as you know, are all our ideas and our, you know, protecting, defending ideas.
Right. And our identification with those things and with our own separate desires and wants and everything.
Yeah.
Is it hard to learn? Is it, you know, when you're teaching workshops, do you?
No, you know, it's getting easier and easier for people, you know, the 100th monkey effect now that,
right.
I mean,
sure,
I've been teaching
sure.
for about 30 years. I mean, in the beginning, it was very hard for people to grasp this. We lived in, you know, and we still do live in a very analytical, competitive society, and people were really, even women were, you know, type A oriented, you know,
mm-hmm.
to compete and to be very outward and not to honor intuition. And so, you know, 30 years ago, it was a whole different thing. People really struggled with it.
Mm.
And over the years, you know, the last 20 years, people have been catching on faster and faster. And now it's in the culture. I mean, millions of people now are familiar with animal communication. It's not thousands anymore. It's millions. And people open to it much faster.
Mm-hmm.
They've already acknowledged it already, usually before they've come to the workshop. It isn't like, oh, this is brand new.
Right.
So then people learn faster, but I would say everybody's different. You know, some people have many more barriers, many more socialized barriers. People who are very much in their head really have a tough time to shift, but it depends on them. Some people, even real heady people, I just tell them, get out of your head. You know, you need to learn to open your heart and your whole body and your senses. This is how we do it. They just drop down and do it. But some people fight, you know, and some people, it's a tougher journey for them. Other people pick it up really fast. You just say a few things or they read my book and they're running, you know. And then it's sort of guidance and correction and helping them to tell the difference between their own projections and when they're really getting it from another, the communication from another being.
Yeah, how do you guide people to tell the difference? What instructions do you give?
My whole course is about that. Well,
no, that's a great, because that's, I could see how that'd be a lot of people say, well, how do you know you're not just making it up? You know?
It's the major question is, how do I tell the difference? How do I know that I'm not just making this up? Well, the animals show you. You know, number one is, you don't, when you project onto another, like if I projected onto you right now,
mm-hmm.
and I said, oh, Ross is really a nasty person who doesn't like people, but he's forced to do this interview. You know, I mean, if I start to do that, what happens to you? You start moving away from me, you shut down, and you don't want to communicate with me much anymore, or,
right.
or you attempt to explain that you're not like this, et cetera, et cetera. But there becomes a distance between
right.
us.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Yeah,
and
sense.
You're less cooperative with me. The same things happen with the animals. Now, if I fully understood you, I said, okay, now I'm getting that Ross is this incredibly beautiful person who really loves to interview people and is really interested in the light, enlightenment of all humankind. Then you start warming up to me because that's the truth.
Mm.
That's more of who you are. And you start coming closer to me and you're more cooperative. You open up. Well, the animals are the same way. When you project onto them, they pee on your bed, you know, they bite you. When you understand them, when you actually get what they're communicating, and you'll see it right in front of you, when I get what they're communicating, that they want this or they want that, or they don't want you to do this, or whatever's going on with them, they come closer, they cooperate, they change their behavior, they get better right in front of you. I mean, I can demonstrate this, and I
right.
have demonstrated it over and over again to audiences. That's why I say the proof is in the pudding. You know, a lot of people will go in with agendas. They'll go in, oh, well, I want to make people wrong with this, you know. So I'm for the animals. I'm not for the people, because some people are, you know, wounded in this way.
Yeah.
So then they go, oh, your dog thinks you're like this. Well, that isn't coming from the dog.
Right.
That's coming from the human agenda. Well, it's real obvious, because animals don't do that. For one thing, even when they have beef, they might say, hey, I don't like this or whatever. But, you know, they're loyal, loving. They give people the benefit of the doubt. They have tremendous, our domesticated animals have tremendous understanding of our problems, of our stress. And they're always trying to de-stress us and help us to play and meditate and all the rest, you know, if they're close to us.
Yeah.
And they're just not cruel like that. You know, I mean, that comes from human wounding. So, you know, right away, there's your tip off. But you can also tell, because as soon as you say things like that, animals withdraw.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't like it.
Right.
And so then it's really the human agenda. It's pretty obvious. And so as we go along, these are real blatant. And then I hone people in getting finer and finer and learning how to keep their own thoughts and agendas to the side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to keep them out of there, because the truest telepathic communication, obviously we filter to some extent through all our experience, because there's no way you can understand another being except through your experience.
Sure.
I mean, people give you raw communication that you have no reference to. You fumble with it. I mean, I do that with animals. When I had no reference, particularly when I started and I hadn't communicated to horses or other animals, and I started, I had no reference to what they were talking about. So I would just tell the people, well, he's showing me pictures of this and that. I don't know what he's talking about. It looks like he's dancing.
Huh.
And then they would say, oh, yeah, that's dressage. And so he's moving his shoulder this way and that way. It looks very strange to me, but I don't know what this is. But the people would tell me, because
uh-huh.
I didn't have the reference, but they had the reference.
Oh, wow. Makes sense.
So, you know, then they would explain to me. And, of course, I got familiar with it. But, you know, so you can get raw information like that. But usually you have to, you know, you have some filter, but the minimum amount of filtering, I mean, if your filter is to just communicate it in as clear a way as possible without putting your own agenda, well, great. You know, I mean, you learn more and more to be clearer and clearer. You know, when people are beginners or people who have agendas, I mean, they actually shouldn't be doing this because it can be harmful, you know, to communicate to people through your own egoic agendas, you know, right. Trying to make people wrong or whatever. But, you know, this is what the difference is among any profession. You know, there's people who are sure. really clear and there's some people who are not. But anyway, I teach people how to differentiate and I give them the tools to be able to tell the difference. And you actually can feel the difference in your body when you're giving a true communication. You learn how to do that when you're giving a true communication and when you're giving one where you're starting to smear it with your own agendas. And pretty soon, of course, I mean, if you're advanced, you don't have agendas. You just communicate with loving connection to another person in the best way possible so that they understand what the animal is saying. You know, I mean, that yeah. should be your you know, motive. I mean, I have a whole code of ethics for people to sort of give their communications in tune with the people and with the animals rather than from, you know, a perspective of, well, I just have to blurt it all out. You know, you state it in the way that it can be understood.
Mm.
That's all in the training of people.
Right, working with someone who's going to be doing this professionally, you mean.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and working with someone doing it professionally, then you're working with humans and animals, and you have to be telepathic with them both mm-hmm. so that you communicate in the most the most desirable way, the way that really gets across and helps people. But, you know, on the path, this is the biggest thing, particularly when people are starting out, is they generally can't tell the difference between their own thoughts. Our culture is so crude on this. You know, there's no training in differentiating between projection and true communication. You know, and that's what telepathy, in order to do telepathy, you have to be very clear on this. You have to be clear on what are, and how your own thoughts originate. You know, so I train people how their own thoughts originate, how to feel the difference. And usually people can tell. You know, they start to feel tingles, you know, of truth in yeah. their spines or wherever in their bodies when it's a true reception. And when it's not, then they can tell that too. But that's know thyself. You know, I mean, you have to know yourself. So that's what I work with people on, is how to tell the difference. But, you know, when people are really new, oh, man, they're just, it's a bunch of mixed stuff.
I'm interested to hear what your thoughts are about the kind or the nature of the consciousness that animals have, partly because I just read a story in this book, The Voice of the Infinite in the Small.
Yes.
A story about you communicating with the fly. And I thought, well, God, you know, most scientists who study animals would probably describe a great degree of difference in the degree of consciousness and et cetera in an insect like a fly or, you know, say a dolphin
or a horse.
But
you see, they don't know. They don't know because they're going by outward appearances and measuring brains.
Yeah.
The only way you can know the consciousness of another being is by communicating with them. How can you know by analyzing a body? Even if I analyzed a human body, how could I know their consciousness?
Mm-hmm.
How could I know a person's consciousness? Just by analyzing the brain, I could assume from what I know already about humans. You know, I mean, because I'm a human, I could go, well, I'm conscious, therefore that brain means, that size of brain means a certain kind of consciousness. Where do you get those kind of conclusions from? It's a very narrow human perspective.
So in terms of your, you know, your direct experience of communicating with insects versus other animals, or, you know, higher mammals, say, is there a difference in their consciousness that you experience directly?
Okay. This is,
or is it kind of, is it all, is consciousness consciousness?
Consciousness is consciousness, and it's funneled through form and function. So when you have different kinds of bodies, you have different functions in the web of life. A fly has a different function than a whale,
right?
Than a human. So therefore, consciousness is expressed in a different way. A fly has only a need to express fly function consciousness. Mm-hmm. A whale has a need to express whale consciousness, which, by the way, the whales and dolphins are definitely our evolutionary leaders and are the most aware beings and able to hold the greatest amount of love of any beings on this planet.
Mm.
But I don't denigrate any species. They are all incredible. Every species holds the wisdom of the ages. Every species holds all the great spiritual truth. You can get the great spiritual truth from any being, including rocks, plants, the soil, every molecule. All life is conscious. It's all communicating the same thing. Now when we get to individuals and individual forms, the individual can also communicate on the highest spiritual truth, but on a, if you're talking about their life in form, they will focus on what they're here for, what they're doing in form,
right.
Just like we do.
Sure, sure.
You know, I mean, everybody does. All beings do. So there's a lot of levels to look at this, that all life is conscious, all life is the infinite, and just, you know, as she says, the voice of the infinite and the small, doesn't matter. Now, when you're talking about biological functioning or, you know, then you're talking about something else. You're talking about how you can move through the form, what you can do in the form,
mm-hmm.
you know, because humans can do a lot of different things that flies can't do.
Sure.
But flies can also do things that humans can't do, like fly, for instance, in their bodies, not just in airplanes.
Without technology, right?
Yeah, you know, without additional things.
Yeah.
So it really, you cannot analyze the consciousness of a fly by looking at their body parts. You can't.
I know. I totally agree with that. That would be a totally materialist view.
Yeah, it would be like saying to a human, okay, how could I even extrapolate what all these body parts mean unless I had a personal experience?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't know a thing. If I were not human and I were trying to analyze a human, I would have to compare it to something else. I mean, what is their consciousness? What do they think about? If I'm doing it from an outward view, now not doing it from an outward view, I simply go inside, I communicate with them, I become them, you know, which is part of direct telepathic communication. I become them and I feel everything that they feel and their consciousness. Of course, flies look at the world in a different way. Their senses are completely different.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean they're less or more conscious. In fact, you know, the animals have been holding the consciousness while we humans have been experimenting in lots of stages of unconsciousness and lots of games that have to do with, I mean, what is killing each other about? What is war about? I mean, that's one of the most unconscious things that we could possibly do.
But aren't there some species of animals that are also really violent, though, with each other?
Yeah, they kill each other, sure. Yeah. Take ants. I mean, you know, they have wars. They have ant wars. They try to wipe out other colonies. And it's all survival stuff. I mean, I'm right. Not saying it's all human. I mean, I'm saying that's a particular kind of consciousness in form.
Right.
You know, and it's following the dictates of the form, because in the human condition is all this violence.
Right.
I mean, we've got it all. You know, we've got the potential to murder and to pray. You know, I mean, we've got the potential to do everything.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? You know, it depends on what level you're working on. And on a physical level, animals, including human animals, operate on survival. Humans mm-hmm. operate on survival, territorialness, when you're talking on a basic physical level.
Right. But the thing, too, I mean, certainly humans have the capacity to transcend that level of existence, not to leave it behind. You have to still survive. But there have been people who have certainly transcended that as a limit on their consciousness and where their attention is. Is that true of animals,
too? There are individual animals who do the same thing.
I'd love to hear a story about an animal like
I could tell you a million stories, and particularly people see this in domesticated animals,
uh-huh.
where you see dogs and cats and birds and mice all living together.
Uh-huh.
I mean, don't you get all these pictures on the internet? Well, you probably don't. I'm an animal person, so people always send them to me, where their mice are curled up right underneath a cat's chin, you know, or the cat is licking the mouse. You know, I mean, cats' instincts are so strong
right.
to kill that mouse. And you will see individuals transcend that. I've had stories of cats who are vegetarian. Now, cats, it's almost impossible for them to be vegetarian, you know, because their whole bodies are geared to blood, you know, I mean, to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And there are cats who survive as vegetarians. You know, I mean, there are many individuals who, you know, and I just talked to my cat. Well, now I only have one cat left over the years, but about not killing the birds, because the birds have a harder time and they're more endangered species. I say stick to the roads, you know,
right.
they eat their natural diet. Stick to the gophers. We've got millions of them and mice and, you know, and they do. You know, my cat will sit among all these little birds outside, quails with their babies, and he won't touch them. And believe me, for a cat, that triggers that movement of a bird right near them is such a big trigger.
So that's amazing. I mean, what is it in the agreement that you've made that's binding to the cat? I mean, that's
because it works
because
better for us. It works better for us. I mean, you know, I mean, and we're talking about intelligent beings here. I mean, Sherman,
right.
Sherman is a master. I mean, he's my friend. And so we function together on the earth to work this out, you know, because there's no real need for him to get the birds. And I do agree it's better for him to have a natural diet. And the rodents, he kills them real fast. I mean, he eats them, you know, that's fine. And I can empathize with the rodents, but they also know they're the food of every other being too. I mean, they get caught by, you know, owls and birds and other wild foxes and everything else. You know, I mean, it's all part of their agreement. So what is it that will we communicate about it? And he's my friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're walking together on the path.
Right. So there's a currency between you of trust and everything that like there would be between two human beings
people.
Who respected each other.
Exactly. Exactly. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. And he's willing to overcome his instincts and to focus on staying in a state of meditation with the birds rather than going with, his adrenaline, you know, which gets fired by, you know, these little moving critters.
So,
and it's not easy for them because, you know, they're geared to hunt like that.
Has he, like, once he made that agreement, has he ever failed to overcome his instincts and
kill
the bird? And
you got to try harder,
you know?
Every now and then he brings birds to me
uh-huh.
alive.
Uh-huh.
And he gives them to me. And then once he killed a little junco, I don't know if you know, maybe you don't have juncos out there, but juncos are, they come in the fall in flocks and flocks. There's huge numbers of them. And they're all over the place. And anyway, they're small birds, like they're like a finch. Well, they are a finch. And anyway, he killed, and I found these junco feathers all over on the front doorstep. And I said, Sherman, you know, you. And he said to me, look, there are so many of them. You can't tell me that they're having a problem surviving. And I said, you're right, Sherman. That was our agreement, was that, you know. I said, no, the juncos are not having a hard time. You're right. But I prefer you not to get back into birds again, because I know, you know, that can lead to you wanting to get more birds, you know, your body triggering on more
right.
birds. And so he stopped.
Those are hard agreements to get humans to keep.
Of course. I mean, these are so instinctual, and we
yeah.
have the same things. We have, you know, very sexual urges and everything else.
Right.
I mean, how are you going to tell people, well, don't ever go to bed with so-and-so, and what happens to people? Well, poof, they're in bed with so-and-so. I mean,
yeah.
it's a similar kind of thing. When you have strong urges,
right.
There they are. Or habits, you know, habitual eating patterns or whatever. Wow, it's a big one. So, you know, it's the more masterful ones that will do that. So I would say, yes, there are violence, obviously, in animals. You know,
yeah.
they are violent to survive. They're programmed.
Right.
They're just as we are. You know, we're very territorial and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, they change and evolve, too. And so you get individuals that pull out of the mold. And just like you do in the human species,
right.
And then gradually it spreads to more and more. We're moving to an age, I feel, and the visions that I've seen, where we will not be eating each other, like a need to eat each other like we do now, like everything
yeah.
eats everything else in this world. And it's very violent. There's a lot of blood and guts and killing and fighting over territory because
yeah.
of this need to eat each other.
Yeah.
And I feel we're going to a different kind of energy form, that our bodies are actually transforming, you know, it'll take a while probably, but to transform where we don't need to live off that kind of denser energy. And this will be the same with the animals too. But until that is the case, here we are, and the violence is part of life. You know, and you have to decide how much of the violence you want in your life. I mean, you know, how much are you going to participate in that, or does your body need that? I mean, some human bodies need meat to survive, you know, or in certain circumstances need that. But then you're contributing to the bloodshed of animals. But, you know, I mean, that's how it is. I mean, the animals kill each other too.
So with, you know, with human beings, there's you know, there's spiritual masters on the one hand, and then there's, you know, criminals, and maybe even maybe to back off a step from criminals, there's just people who are jerks, you know, and they won't keep their agreement. Have you ever worked with animals that were jerks, so to speak, jerks that just wouldn't keep an agreement, they wouldn't listen to you, they said, I don't want anything to do with you, lady, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah, there are animals like this. I mean, generally, the people that call for consultations are more aware people, so their animals are, you know, they mirror each other. Mm-hmm. But you do have animals who say, or who can't control, don't feel they can control their impulses or whatever. So you have to work with them in a different way. You have to work, like, in a more rudimentary way, like training.
Uh-huh. Like to teach them that they can actually... that they can make choices about their behavior and that
exactly.
Kind of thing.
So you know, you put more. You say, okay, if you don't want to do this, this is the way it is. You're going to have to be in a cage a certain amount of the day, you know, or I have to put a barrier between you and the neighbors if you can't stop biting the neighbor's dog, or you know, whatever it is. But there will be animals that are on definitely have a much harder time consciously changing.
Right. I'd love to ask about what your thoughts were about soul and about animals having souls. And I mean, obviously you believe that they, or you've experienced them speaking about.
It's the same as the Native American philosophy. All life is conscious. All beings are alive. Everything is alive. Everything communicates. All our soul. It isn't even a matter of having souls. They are soul. We are all soul. You know, and again, we can talk about individual souls and on, you know, we'll be here forever. But yes, they are all soul, and they all go on, and they're all eternal, and the form, of course, dies. Mm-hmm. I mean, simple, straightforward.
Right.
I don't understand how people cannot look into the eyes of any animal, or even animals that don't have eyes, just feel them, and not experience soul. I have no idea how they would not, except if they do not experience themselves as souls.
It's interesting because one time when I was younger, I was in the Boy Scouts, and you know, they tried to teach us how to fish, and they weren't very good at it, or we weren't good students, and so we would go fishing on these backpacking trips, and I never caught a fish. You know, until much later, I was probably 20, I was in college, and I went with my friend, and I finally caught a fish, right? And I was vegetarian at this point. It was just fishing for fishing's sake, for fun, you know. And I caught this fish, and we wanted to do catch and release, you know, but the hook got caught in its mouth, and I wasn't experienced. I didn't know how to take the hook out. And so it basically, you know, I cut its mouth up, and it died, and it was holding it in my hands, and I was looking in its eyes, and I had the experience you're describing of, you know, of an intense, you know, knowing that, you know, that this was a conscious being, and that I had harmed it for, you know, no reason other than my own callous, casual, you know, entertainment.
Yeah.
And it had made a big impact on me, and most.
It's beyond me that people could not see. The only reason they don't see is the veils in front of their eyes, that they're looking through blinders, that they're looking through the blinders of ideas, that they are disconnected from the rest of the world. The whole world is alive. I mean, stand next to a tree. Do you not feel the pulsing of life, the blood of that tree, the consciousness of the tree? I don't, the only way you could not is if you are socialized into being divorced from that connection. And my whole bent, my whole mission here is to reconnect people so we know we're all one. We're all one being. We're all one life. We can communicate with everybody, everything. It's all alive, and we live in a different way when we have that consciousness. There's no way you can live in a cruel way, you know, not consciously cruel, you know, hurting others when you live in that consciousness.
Do you think that there's anything whatsoever that other than, like you're saying, that, you know, the differences in form and function that apply across the board to all forms of life, but is there anything in particular that's unique about human beings?
We are the one who tell all the others' stories.
Hmm.
I mean, animals tell stories too, but not like we do. We're the ones who keep telling stories round and round in circles. We tell the stories about each other. We tell stories about all the rest of creation. We are the storytellers.
We're doing it right now.
Exactly. I mean, animals don't call each other up and make meetings to educate each other about what to pass on the stories. They just do it. They just live it. They just live each other consciousness. And I mean, it's passed through their DNA, obviously. We pass all our stories through our bodies. But we are the ones who talk and consciously keep talking about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we write about it and we fill books about it. I mean, that's the difference with us.
That's great. Well, Penelope, I should let you go. I really appreciate your
Well, I love talking with you, Ross.
Thanks a lot.
Okay,
bye
for now.
Bye.